Welcome to The Next Step. Hey, this is Father Vasque and welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast dedicated to looking at life, examining the very fabric of our being, and doing it all through the lens of ancient Armenian Orthodoxy. The Next Step is part of the expanding vision of the In Issues Mission, the Armenian Church Youth Ministry Center in Glendale, and is brought to you exclusively by the Apostles Net, Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World. So if you're ready, let's take The Next Step. Well, here we are already October 1st, and we're starting our podcast with a beautiful time of year when the leaves are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low.
Oh, I just couldn't resist that. It is just a wonderful time of year. And of course, Van Morrison's Moondance sets the pace, sets us in the mood for this beautiful time of year. The fall, autumn, leaves start falling. And of course, some of the summer heat starts to dissipate. And we start enjoying life in a different form. And of course, we need to start talking about that enjoyment, because what a roller coaster ride we've been through last couple weeks. And it's still looking like there's a lot of dips, a lot of ups, uphills with the economy and the way things are going and what people are talking about, the domino effect in it all. We're going to be talking a little bit about that today, as well as some other issues. I want to talk about the political climate here in the Americas. You've got to realize what it's like right now, where everything that is being discussed back and forth by the two main candidates, Obama and McCain, is being scrutinized. And what was it Palin said, that these are now a gotcha moment, like people throwing out those small little things and saying gotcha? Well, it's not just on Palin, it's everywhere that you look. People are just ready. And you know what I think it is? I think it's this electronic world that we live in. I was thinking about that the other day. You know, growing up, once a year, maybe once every few years, we'd have an opportunity to see Wizard of Oz. That, to me, as a child, was one of the most beautiful movies, because it was this fantasy. It was going from black and white reality to this fantasy dream. We're following the yellow brick road, and then finding out at the end of it, you're really best off where you are. You realize that there is no place like home. And this story, which has moved millions of people, and its adaptation to the silver screen since 1939 has stirred up so many souls. But as a child, we'd get to watch it every so often. I believe it was Easter time or something, sometime when we'd have some off time from school, and one of the networks would show it. And we'd huddle around the TV, oh, so fascinated that we had this opportunity. Well, you think about it now. We had videotapes, now we have DVDs, and basically it's any time you feel like a fix, anytime you want to go down that yellow brick road, you could just pop it into your TV and you're ready. You're right there to jump into your fantasy. But what's even more interesting is our ability to rewind those fantasies. Did you catch a word there? Well, we could rewind it. We can go back to it. It's not like you have to wait till next year, or you have to wait 2 years from now when the network will decide to show it to you. You have the option right now to stick a DVD into your TV, or through computers, basically rewind. Did Father Voskin say that? Well, we're not sure. Well, you know what? Just move the slider back a couple inches and you can hear him do it again. Well, what happens is that we start over-scrutinizing, becoming over-critical of the life that we live in. And this is really getting to us psychologically, too. And when you look at the candidates, you know, when they say something, oh, did they say that? Should they have said that? Well, let's listen to it backwards, forwards. When in reality, think about your life. Think about how many times you say something and, you know, you're just glad that nobody caught it. Nobody heard it. You're glad that there's no rewind button on your life. You're glad that your life isn't a TiVo machine. But candidates, as well as people in public offices, public figures, don't have that luxury. Most all of life is now TiVo'd, so people can go backwards and forwards, and we're finding people becoming more and more critical. So you got to ask yourself, like, you know, is it right? Is it right that these things take place the way they do? And really kind of like ask yourself, what is the intention? And I challenge you to really think about what Armenian Orthodoxy is that we've been talking about for these several months. I mean, when we talk about being part of the totality, for instance, when you go into an Armenian church, many times we've heard the argument, well, I don't understand what's going on. Is it necessary to understand every single word? Or is it necessary to understand the concept? Is it necessary to understand every single nuance and turn? Or is it necessary to understand why we are there, why we are celebrating? Many times people get caught up in the technicalities. Is the candle burnt at both ends or only in the center? Or what about the incense? If the incense is sensed 3 or 4 times as opposed to 5 times, and you know the mystical number 6 doesn't flow with the 7, or is it necessary to understand that that incense has a reason to bring us into, to bring every member of our body, every sense, including our olfactory senses, to be able to put it into this bigger term of realizing that we are part of the bigger whole? Every leader, for instance, Jesus, when he spoke within a certain period of time and spoke in a specific language. But that language transcended that time when we understood not the words, but understood the message. I say this many times. In Armenian, for instance, we have expressions. For instance, a congratulations in Armenian is Achkadluis. It means may there be light in your eye. Now imagine trying to translate that expression to somebody, and what would happen? It would be lost in the translation. People would automatically put that into, well, does that mean you take a flashlight, a searchlight? Should it be one of those big beams and just like poke it in the person's eye? Or what happens if he's not wearing corrective goggles to compensate for that light? I mean, it's not about that. It's an expression about congratulations. And the same thing when these politicians talk, just like I was saying about the opportunity to watch Wizard of Oz, it's not a question of backing it up forward and backwards and saying, oh, look, they made a mistake here or they said these. But what is the context? What are they talking about? What is the message that's coming across to us? What are their actions showing us? And do we want these people to become the leaders of this country? Just like in our faith, it's not a question of the words. It is what has become of those words. What can become of those words? What is the entire package that we're receiving? Armenian Orthodoxy, when we talk about Orthodoxy, it's the idea that you have an opportunity to plug into something that is really the big package. Not just a collection of words. Not just an expression or a thought. But an entire living style, an entire eternity that begins from the beginning of time and goes on forever. And you have that ability to plug in. To a very special email I received this week, because this one, it comes from Amsterdam, but it just kind of hits it right on the head, and it opens the door for this discussion.
New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say. People just like it.
Okay, well, this is a letter that comes to us from a gentleman named John. He says, I just began listening to The Next Step a few weeks ago and liked what I heard. So much so that I started listening to some of the older ones and was miffed to hear Harry Belafonte mixed in with the legendary Lucine Zakarian as Armenian Orthodox music. Indeed, it troubled me. I thought it was a joke. But last week, when you mused us with Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, something very big hit me. I understood Beethoven as belonging to something greater than the world of classical music. He had transcended time through his music and was talking to me. So forgive my boldness, but am I right to assume that you believe Beethoven to fall in the camp of orthodoxy? And can I take it a step further and say that Beethoven was Armenian Orthodox? I love this. These podcasts are making me think about myself and my faith in a different way. Thank you, and all the best to you and your staff at The Next Step. With prayers, John from Amsterdam. And John, you hit it right on the head. Yes, Beethoven is an Armenian Orthodox person. Okay, what do we mean by that? Yes, did you know that? Well, he probably didn't speak any Armenian, but he was so close to tune. Because think of it in these terms, okay? And I really challenge our listeners. When I play these different songs, it's not a question of just finding our past and looking at ancient hymns. I mean, that would be the easiest thing to do, right? I mean, walk into an ancient Armenian church, walk into one of the monasteries. That music, those rituals will take you back. Go to Jerusalem and you will be directly connected with the ancient Armenian Orthodox faith. But it's all through these rituals and it's all through these sounds and smells and sights, which are so important. But sitting here in America, where we are being bombarded by all kinds of information, right and left, how do we find that orthodoxy? What does that mean to us? Well, it's very simple. It's in those terms that we, when we played that piece from Beethoven. This is exactly the point right here. Beethoven in playing that transcends time. You hit it right on the head, John. I mean, it is timeless, this music. And that's what orthodoxy is. Ortho, when we say orthodox, what does that mean? Ortho means straight. I mean, think about if you have a orthopedic mattress. What is it? A straight mattress. Or ortho is, I think, a one of the brand names. Or orthodontics, to straighten your teeth. Straight. Orthodox means the straight path, the straight thought, the straight way of thinking, or the, let's say, correct, because straight might have other implications, the correct way. Now, if we are to assume that orthodoxy is the correct path, then we are not relegating it into a pool of denominations. Orthodoxy is not another denomination. It is something that is beyond time. And so when I said earlier in our podcast a few weeks ago, we talked about war. There are no good wars, because for God, everyone is one of his children. When you talk about war on this planet, you're talking about civil war in the eyes of God, because every one of us is his child. The person living in Africa, the one in Asia, the one in Europe, the one in South America, the one in North America, yes, even the one in Antarctica. We are all children of God. And every time that we hit one another, every time that we hurt one another, we are sinning against God. We are hurting God's creation. There is no one correct people. And in the same way, when we talk about the correct path, orthodox, we are talking about something greater than denominationalism. We're not saying that this is the correct way and it's better than yours, ha ha ha, nanny, nanny, nanny. We're looking at it and we're saying, look at it. This is something that transcends time. You realize that that art, that music, it talks to the soul and not to the intellect, and that soul is eternal. That soul belongs to God. That soul was there at creation and continues on forever. That's the beauty of orthodoxy. It is not something that is relegated to a few centuries, to a particular geographical area, or to a group of people. When I say Armenian Orthodoxy, I feel that in the past the Armenians have been able to tap into that, because certainly there's nothing else. There is absolutely nothing else on this planet in history that explains why these people continue to live. And yet these people, despite every odd, despite every challenge, despite every murderer, rapist, barbarian who has gone through their land, these people have survived. And it's not because of guns, it's not because of military power, it is because of this idea that peace and justice are eternal. That peace begins with God, and certainly in our lives we can experience it when we tap in to that God. That God that has been there from the beginning of time, and orthodox in the correct path, in that straight path, has led us to this point. Now, all this sounds really good, and you say, well, how does that help in my life? Well, think about the things that are going on right now. I said, we are going through a roller coaster right now. I mean, look at what's happening in the world with the financial markets. One day it's up, one day it's down, one day the Congress has to get over it. I heard an interview with some people from visiting here from England, and they said that we've always heard that when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. And yes, there is a trickling, there is a domino effect that certainly the world is going to feel, and we need to take responsibility for our world. This is also something we've talked about countlessly and endlessly. This is a word we don't like to even talk about sometimes. In fact, many religions kind of shy away from it. Not kind of, they just do. Responsibility is what we are called to. We talk about the financial markets, but think about our ecosystem. Think about the planet that we're inhabiting. And we hear about diseases, we hear about catastrophes, we hear about global warming, and we take it in stride. I mean, we wait till gas prices go up, and we're very appalled by gas prices, but it hasn't changed our habits. Basically, we continue the same patterns that we've always been accustomed to. These are called addictions. And in fact, one of the biggest addictions that we have right now is drugs. And the drugs I'm talking about are not the ones that come in pills or you smoke or you drink. The drugs are what you find at the checkout counter, what you find on TV, on the radio, in your newspapers and magazines. It's our obsession with things that just don't matter, about what the top score is in a football game or a basketball game, in what happens to so-and-so and what they did with what's-his-name. Like, just think about it for a moment. We're being told that the world is on the verge of economic collapse. We need a $3/4 trillion fix to the economy. Well, if we're in this situation and the president is telling us this is happening, does it make sense that the next day we're laughing at Regis and Kelly, or that we're sitting around and watching who's going to make the next home run at the baseball game? I mean, like, we either have to say that, yes, we do have some serious problems, or we have to just laugh at the whole thing. And I think what's happened is that this drug, it's our obsession with things that don't matter. Paris Hilton, Kardashian, and Armenian. Who cares who these people are living with? Who cares how they dance? Who cares how they dress? And yet we as a society have made these our gods. We've patterned our lives to be concerned about what they wear, what they speak, who they are with, who they associate with. And basically it has taken our responsibility in a different direction. You know, we get so wrapped up with other people because basically we're in a materialistic world, right? I mean, that's what all these finances are about. That's what everything is. When we talk about domino effects, nobody's saying that, well, if you don't believe in God, there's going to be a domino effect and civilization will cease to be. They're saying, well, if you don't believe in the dollar, if you don't believe in what this materialism could buy you, then there will be a domino effect and down the line, well, you won't be able to afford the houses and the banks won't be able to lend to one another, you won't be able to have your work and so on and so on, and there's the domino effect, okay? But what about spirituality? How many of us are willing to say that, you know what, in my life, I cared about the poor. I cared about the people who are suffering. And I maybe closed my eyes today, closed my eyes tomorrow to this stupidity and trash and drugs that they're feeding me every day as if I should care. And you see it every single day. You've got these superstars that get up and they talk about their lifestyles and people applaud and clap because they're so cute and they've had these children and they've done this and that. And meanwhile, we have children on the street who are giving birth to children. And those little babies are without home, without security, are without the proper care to survive. And we could really care less. A couple of our girls just returned from Armenia. They told me about horror stories inside of the orphanages. Children, and I said, what orphans are there now? I mean, a few years ago in Armenia, certainly there was an earthquake. A few years after that, there was the torture and the things that happened after the independence and no fuel. No heating, and obviously there were some difficulties there, and children were abandoned. But what about now? We have abandoned children. Basically, kids that don't have anybody who cares about them. They've been conceived and then let to rot. And the same is true if in Armenia, in many third world countries. I say this because we need to start taking a closer look at what life has given us. We talk about the 4,000 casualties that America has had in Iraq. Does anybody remember that there's still a war going on in Iraq? I mean, between all of the Obamas and McCains, and talking about all of the different financial difficulties we've had, and talking about Al-Qaeda and the anniversaries of 9/11, does anybody realize that there is a war? There are people dying in Iraq? And we talk about the 4,000 people that have died. That 4,000 is just the American casualties. For God, there is no difference between American and Iraqi casualties. He cries for every single person that dies. The tens of thousands, if not of hundreds of thousands of people who have died there. Talk about Darfur. Are we just basically closing our eyes? Are we basically turning our heads and becoming those monkeys, putting our hands over our eyes, our hands over our ears, and maybe if we don't see it, maybe if we don't hear about it, we don't need to talk about it, much like the ostrich who sticks his head into the sand, and maybe it'll all go away? This is all around us, folks. It's happening everywhere. And when we talk about Armenian Orthodoxy as a way, we're talking about a way, a correct way, a correct path that puts us in line with peace, in line with justice. And those are the things that we need to work for. A few weeks ago when we honored Gabriel Staring as Person of the Year for his exemplary work in the Darfur Desert, in Chad, in the refugee camps, there was something that kept coming out over and over. The people that he meets in those camps, they have lost everything. Their women have been raped, their husbands have been murdered, their sons have been tortured. These people do not want anything more than the one thing that they keep saying: give us justice and there will be peace. There cannot be peace until there is justice. And what are we talking about justice? A couple people getting up and making a video, a couple people getting up and, you know, like, we care which hotel family, hotel chain they came from, or which lawyer's children they are. Like, who cares about these people? There are people today that need our help and need our attention. That's what Orthodox responsibility is. It's saying that I am willing to take my feet out of my shoes and put them in the shoes of others, to walk in the shoes of others, to feel the pain of others. And this is something throughout history we've seen that the people who have survived have been able to do this. They've been able to equate love and peace and forgiveness in a formula that is much like the 7x77 formula that Christ has given us. You forgive, and you realize that in that forgiveness, you have an opportunity to rise to something greater than yourself. I mean, I'm sorry I get really preachy about a lot of this, but it is something that is very important. And actually, that's what I do well. I'm a preacher. I'm a person who gets up at least once a week and talks. And I enjoy telling people what's on my mind. It's kind of like, I think, comes with age, too. So it's very cathartic, you know. I shouldn't apologize for it, but there are certain things in life that you need to be passionate about and you need to be preachy about. You need to submit to yourself and to others your credentials as a human being. I mean, Martin Luther King said, "I submit to you that if a man hasn't discovered something he will die for, he isn't fit to live." I mean, think about that for a moment. In each and every one of our lives, God challenges us to find that beautiful thing. In Jesus' parables, he talks about a pearl. He says that pearl is out there, and when you find it, you sell everything you have just to acquire that. Well, what's he talking about? It's that willingness to sacrifice it all for something greater than you. Something that you're willing to give yourself to. And in all of our teachings in Armenian Orthodoxy, we come back to that same message, that Jesus' message was about how we react with one another, how we deal with one another, where our passion begins and where our passion takes us. Not ends, but where our passion takes us. Because there is no end to it. There is opportunities for us to plug into and really make a full life for ourselves, for the ones we love and the ones we care about. You know, a few minutes ago when I ranted and raved about all of this stuff that's happening and then our obsessions with these drugs that we've been fed along the way, it's not to talk about a doom and gloom kind of atmosphere in our world. It's just to take a logical look at life. I mean, if they're telling us or we believe that the world is in that situation, then doesn't it behoove us to really work on making it better? If we are truly a church, I mean, don't we have an obligation to really strive for the principles that the leader of that church strove for? In other words, if the reason the leader came was to bring peace and justice to the world, don't we have an obligation to at least follow those same paths and strive for peace, work for peace? And to work for that peace means to work for that justice. It means to sacrifice and really to do something meaningful with our lives. And that's why when we get to the point of politics, I think that it's very, very important that we understand that those politics, those people who will be taking leadership roles, are getting to those positions because of the politics they're playing. So definitely, we have some voice, or should have some voice in that process. A voice that is based and rounded by our understanding of peace and justice for all of humanity. Okay, I told you we're going to have some fun with politics and religion, and I do so because some interesting things happened this week. You remember a few weeks ago we played some little excerpts from the conversation that both Obama and McCain had with Rick Warren, Pastor Rick Warren, and we listened to some of their sayings and their basic faith statements. And what was interesting is that last Sunday, a group of evangelical churches, or I believe some mainstream churches were in there as well, got together and said, let's defy the IRS's ban on the mixing of religion and politics, and let's talk about politics. Let's go out there. And I thought that was fantastic. I have to say that was fantastic. That's something I've done personally in our church, and I have no qualms about it. I have never used the pulpit to tell anybody this is how you should vote, this is what you should do, but I've certainly brought to forum issues that candidates have brought up, and I continue to do that here on these podcasts. I want to do that, and I'm so glad that an actual movement took place this week, because so many times churches are complacent when it comes to social action. I mean, wasn't this the case when Martin Luther King, when he was writing from Birmingham prison, what was he complaining about? He says, you as the clergy people are out there talking about a revolution that Jesus Christ brought about, a revolution for peace, a revolution for justice, and yet you as the spokespeople for that church are not willing to take that next step, not willing to walk the walk. And in the same way today, when we hear about these politicians invoking the name of God many times very freely, I mean, it just slips out of their mouths, God bless America, and let's bomb the hell out of everybody else in this world. I mean, there's got to be some accountability, certainly to the people who are concerned, like ourselves, with the manner in which the name of God is invoked. Because when I talk about God, I'm talking about the biblical God, which is love. And when you're talking about an eternal love, how dare you? How dare you clutter that with war and talk of war? How dare you take love and adulterate it with talks of injustice, inequality for people who do not look like you, who do not think as you? And this is very, very important, because this comes out in the candidates' speeches, in the candidates' talk. And I'm not talking about speeches that need to be rewound for this word or that word. I'm talking about a general feeling of what they're talking about. And certainly this week gave us an awful lot of it. The first presidential debates took place, and by the time this podcast is aired, by the time many of you are hearing this, I think the first vice presidential debates will have taken or will be taking place, and hopefully you'll listen to this podcast before then, but they are taking place. Now, what's interesting is that this lady, I use Yahoo browser, and I know it's a generational thing. What's your portal? Mine happens to be Yahoo.
Yahoo!
So there on Yahoo's front page today, there is a picture and an article about a lady named Elizabeth Hasselbeck. She is one of the View contributors. There's a show, a popular show on ABC called The View, and she is complaining because her voice is a conservative one, and it sometimes gets stifled among the other contributors to the show who happen to be liberals. And this is what it says over here. Elizabeth Hasselbeck, the only politically conservative member of the hosting crew on ABC's The View, apparently is becoming more annoyed with her liberal counterparts. Chicago Sun-Times columnist Bill Zwecker quotes a longtime staff member of the show as saying, "It's not as bad as during the Rosie era." Okay, are you getting ready for the drugs right now? Okay, we've got Hasselbeck, we've got Rosie. Listen to this lineup now. But Hasselbeck, the sister-in-law of Seattle Seahawks quarterback Matt Hasselbeck, is really upset with the liberal politics of co-hosts Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar. Zwecker said it was his understanding that The View creator and occasional co-host Barbara Walters had called a cooling-off meeting to keep a lid on things. Last year, Rosie O'Donnell, who has since left the show, and Hasselbeck famously squabbled over their differing views of the war in Iraq. Now, first of all, folks, who cares? I guess we do. We do, because we're getting fed this stuff. Like, what does it matter what these people think? But what got my attention is that Elizabeth Hasselbeck is annoyed that her views are not considered, or she feels stifled in expressing her views. And it got me to thinking, if anybody should feel stifled, it should be me. I mean, here we are as a religious community, listening to these people talk about war, about how they're going to move our future, how they're going to move everything in a positive direction, according to each of the candidates. And they're sometimes invoke the name of God as well. And how should I feel as a priest who is not able to talk as a priest, not able to combine religion and politics. And for that reason, this particular Sunday, this last weekend, I was very pleased, very, very pleased that a group of Protestant ministers mostly got together and they challenged the IRS. Actually, in the pulpit, they started talking about politics. Now, I want to inject one caveat into this whole thing because I think it's important. Because I've spoken about this many times. You can't just blanketly talk about religion. And there is a danger because so much of religion tends to take on an extremist view if it goes unchecked. In fact, one of the reverends who was part of this plan, his name, Reverend Wiley Drake from the First Southern Baptist Church of Buena Park, made mention, we may not be politically correct, but we are going to be biblically correct. Now, let me just tell you that that is scary, because what does that mean, biblically correct, from a group of people who have an interpretation or that believe that each individual believer has the right to interpret Scripture as they so please. Reverend Ed Bacon, who's from the All Saints Episcopal Church, let's say with a more traditional background in Christianity, Christology, he makes a very good point. He says, these people are wanting to promote one candidate over another, and that's a huge difference. Certainly it is. When we talk about politics and religion, it's very important for us to say that here are a set of standards that these people profess to follow. When we examined Obama, when we examined McCain, you see that they come from different traditions. One may be taking a more practical approach, one taking a more spiritual approach. Whatever it is, as people who are going to be voting, you should not vote for that person based on his religion or because of his religion. But you have to understand that that religion shapes his worldview and will shape the way that he governs a country. As a priest, as a religious leader, I have an obligation to present those views to a congregation and through these podcasts to people. And that's what I hope we can do. There are some serious issues between both candidates that separate them, and you need to be able to see those things. I said it earlier, it's not a question of one word here or another word there. It's not a question of hitting that rewind button and laughing and saying, oh, they made a mistake and gotcha. It's a question of how do they interpret the entire world. And so it is with each and every one of us. We all interpret the world, and in so doing, it affects our relationships. Well, in the case of a president, it affects the relationships on a grander scale, on the global scale, on the bigger world theater. And so it is important as human beings to take advantage of that beautiful right that has been given to us. I think that as Americans, this opportunity to vote is truly beyond ourselves. It is divine. It is divine because you have an opportunity to effectuate your change. You have an opportunity to say, I want to not believe in destiny, not believe in the stars, not believe that it is written out for me, but I have an opportunity to create my tomorrow. And in so doing, I take the responsibility for what I have created. That second part of it is very important as well. I take the responsibility. I'm going to leave you with a little bit of music right now. We're going to listen to John Belazikchin doing what has been popularly called Handel's Der Bohemia. It is a piece written by Handel, of course, and it has been adapted in our Armenian liturgy. In many ways, it brings together some of the past, it brings some of the hurt, some of the pain, but it also explodes into a very, very beautiful piece of praise. Here it is, John Belazikchin playing Der Bohemia. That was John Belazikchin doing Handel's Der Vorhormia, and that is on his Christmas album. If you want to learn more about John Belazikchin and his music, you could check him out at Dantz Records, DANTZ Records.com. And that about does it for this week's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed producing it for you. If you happen to be in the Southern California area, I want to let you know that Wednesday evenings we'll be looking at politics and religions, not only the candidates, but also some of the measures that are hitting California. We're in Glendale at Stalker and Kenilworth, and the doors open at 7:30. You're welcome to come and join us. And of course, every Sunday morning, come by and check us out. We're at the same location, and we always welcome anybody who's one of our podcast listeners. I want to thank you for all of your support and all of your letters. I know you've been writing to me, and I haven't had a chance to read them all. I promise I'll get to them, but it's always nice to keep you online with these little promises, because you know I'm going to deliver, and I will. I appreciate all of your messages. Send them to feedback@epostle.net. And you know, check out that website, epostle.net, and inhisshoes.org, because we have a lot of stuff that's going on right now. Earlier, I told you about these two girls that returned from Armenia and talked about some of the difficulties that they've gone through in the orphanage. We are taking on that project as an In Issues project. And coming up, you know, we've been working with Warren Goodman, who's been in prison for 14 years here in the California Correctional Facility. We're going to be working with him in a little more intense way, where we'll need people from all levels to get involved and active. If you haven't heard about him, please join us at our website, inhisshoes.org. There are all kinds of information, all kinds of activities, and all kinds of things that you can plug into to take a responsibility for this life. God has given you this beautiful life. Enjoy it, share it, and love. Well, before I leave you this week, I know it's a little bit early, but I want to just remind you to mark down on your calendars December 18th. I know it's early, but I don't want anybody coming back and saying, we should have bought tickets when he told us about it. We didn't know. Actually, this will be the event you want to come to. Buy, borrow, steal, beg, whatever it takes. Get to Los Angeles on that evening when we will hear Gor Mkhitaryan playing a concert of his newest music. It is the Spirit album, a Spirit album that we have co-produced with him, and we are so excited about it because it is the first time Armenian music comes out in that spirit. And I think it's hard to describe in words right now. As the time gets closer, we'll try to define it, but you won't really get it until you come to the Zipper Hall that evening in Los Angeles. Mark it down on your calendar because tickets will be available soon. So for Susie, our producer, and for Ken, who's up in the booth, looking at me through that smoke-colored glass, this is Father Voskin, hoping that you'll join us again next week. And I invite you to join us next week as we take the next step. God bless.